Connie Rosa-Renouf is an assistant research professor at George Mason University's Center for Climate Change Communication. As a member of a collaborative research team at Yale and George Mason, she participates in the design and analysis of biannual surveys on Americans' climate-related attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors, which is titled Climate Change in the American Mind. Her research focuses on understanding how diverse publics use, interpret, and respond to information on this issue in order to identify effective communication strategies that inform and engage the audiences. So Connie's going to be diving in a bit more to how you actually go through the process of understanding your audience, which was something Suzanne mentioned is absolutely critical to getting effective communication strategies off the ground. So with that, I will turn things over to Connie. Thank you.
Thank you. Is my screen up? Can you see it?
Yep.
Great. Okay. So I am going to extend and expand on some of what Susie just talked to you about, talking to you about how to communicate with Americans about the issue of climate change. So effective communication begins with understanding your audience. What we have in the U.S. is a wide range of beliefs and opinions about climate change. And audience research that's been conducted at George Mason in collaboration with our friends at Yale has identified six different groups that hold fairly coherent beliefs, values, opinions on the issue. And when we understand what those different groups think and how they feel about the issue, then we can address their concerns more directly. The groups that we identified are Global Warming Six Americas, and you can see them here laid out on a spectrum from the alarmed down at the left end of the spectrum, who are the most convinced that climate change is occurring. They're the most worried about it, the most motivated to take action themselves, the most supportive of government action to mitigate climate change. And at the other end of the spectrum, we have the dismissive, who are convinced that climate change is not occurring. They're likely to think that it's a scientific hoax, and they oppose government action to reduce climate change. In between, then, we have a range of belief and levels of concern. And these six groups differ in their values, in their political orientation, in their religiosity. But there are two dimensions that are particularly important for us as communicators. First, beliefs and concern decrease steadily as we move from the alarm to the dismissive. But there's a second pattern here that's also very important in terms of communication, and that is how involved with the issue is the audience. How much do they care about it? How much do they think about it? And at the ends of the spectrum, we have people who think about the issue and talk about it and care about it. And in the middle, we have the people who, for whom this is just not on their radar. I loved Susie's slide of the woman with the megaphone talking to the young girl on her cell phone. Those are the people who are in our disengaged group. And we're going to think about how we can reach them. We need different strategies for talking to them than we do for talking to the people at the other ends of the continuum. So I'm going to show you a couple of examples of this. Here we have a slide showing how certain people are that global warming is or is not occurring. And what you can see is that the top four segments, the alarmed through the disengaged, all believe that global warming is occurring, but it's only the alarmed who are really sure of that, whereas the cautious and disengaged have very weak belief that it is occurring. The doubtful are right there at the middle of the scale saying that they don't know, and the dismissive down at the bottom are pretty sure that global warming is not occurring. Here's an example from risk perceptions. These are averages of eight items asking how much do you think global warming will harm you or your family, your community, and so on. And you see the same steady decrease, except that here we see the cautious and disengaged have very similar levels of risk perception. But what's different between them here is that if these questions did not include a don't know option, if we had had a don't know option there, the vast majority of the disengaged would have said, I don't know. So their best guess is similar to the cautious, but they are much less sure of their opinion than the cautious are. Here we have human causation. You can see the steady decrease from the left to the right. The doubtful, who say that they are not sure if global warming is happening or not. One thing that they are pretty sure about is that if it's happening, it's being caused by natural changes in the environment rather than by human activities. Now, here's the second pattern. How much had you thought about global warming before today? And there you can see the curvilinear relationship with the alarmed having thought about it a lot, the disengaged little to not at all, and the dismissive saying they've thought about it some. What that translates into is attitudinal certainty. The agreement with a statement, I could easily change my mind about global warming. The cautious and the disengaged tend to agree with that, whereas the alarmed and dismissive strongly disagree that they could change their opinions on this issue. Now, if we go back to the model that I presented you earlier, this has implications then for communication. That at the alarmed end of the spectrum, we have people who are willing to pay attention to what we have to say on the issue. They're willing to read about it. They're likely to seek out information on climate change. They're predisposed to accept what they hear that is supportive of the science and to take action themselves. At the other end of the spectrum, the dismissive, and to some extent the doubtful, they're not going to go seeking information on the issue, but when they come in contact with it, they will pay attention. However, they're unlikely to be persuaded by what they hear. In fact, they may be reconfirmed in their wrong beliefs, because what they will spend their time doing is counter-arguing, thinking of all the reasons they disagree with the science. And then there in the middle, we have our audiences who have low issue engagement, who are not very willing to pay attention they don't want to read about it, they don't really even want to hear about it, and while they have a weak belief that global warming is occurring, they can be easily persuaded one way or another depending on what the most recent argument that they've heard is. So they hear one thing and they think, oh yeah, okay, and then they hear something else and then they're changed in that direction, and they don't hold information, they don't hold beliefs very strongly. Currently, we have just over 40% of the U.S. population in our two most concerned segments, 28% down there in the least concerned segments, and about 30% of the population there in the middle. So when we think about objectives for these audiences, our alarmed segment, and to some extent the concerned, what we want to try to do is activate them. This refers back to what Susie was talking about with getting them to talk to other people. We also want them to engage in political and consumer activism, you know, contact their representatives. They are the most active politically, but only a small proportion of them are actually doing anything in terms of contacting legislators and so on. And we would like to get them talking about it more. The middle segments, we want to engage them. And in terms of the different types of engagement that Susie presented earlier, I would say this is emotional engagement. What we want to explain to them is why they should care about this, so that they become more motivated to learn more about it and do something. And with the dismissives, our primary objective is to just avoid annoying them, because they become angry and then they speak out against action, and we don't want them to do that. We want to avoid that as much as possible. So what we want to try to do, I think, is think about how we are going to engage those middle segments. The alarmed and concerned are already on our side. The dismissive, we're not going to persuade. However, those middle segments, we have the opportunity, by teaching them or helping them to understand why they should care, to get them engaged and move them up toward the alarmed end of the spectrum, which would help us greatly in getting policies passed that take action to mitigate climate change. So the overall, overarching strategic advice that we use is to use simple messages that we repeat often and use a variety of trusted sources. Simple messages require little to no processing. We get them very easily. Repetition addresses the problem with the middle segments forgetting. Repetition means after a while of hearing the same thing, it sticks. And trusted sources, well, people accept information more readily from trusted sources. And the messages that we think are most important to communicate about climate change are that it is real, that it is harmful, our actions are causing it, that scientists agree that it is real and human-caused, and that our actions can reduce the threat. It's very important for people to understand that there are things that we can do that will reduce the threat. There's a growing body of research showing that when people hold four of those beliefs, certainty, harm, human causation, and solvability, it increases their desire for a societal response on the issue. They become supportive of climate policies, and they are more likely to engage in political and consumer activism. And when we increase the fifth key belief there, perceived scientific agreement, when people come to understand the scientific consensus on the issue, it strengthens all four of those key beliefs. So that's what we want to get across. Let's think about barriers then. First of all, low interest in the issue. Here you see that majorities of the disengaged, doubtful, and dismissive say they really don't want to hear about it. Second barrier is ability, that over three-quarters of the disengaged say they have difficulty understanding news reports. But even among the alarmed, we see 23% agree with that statement. Scientific information is intimidating to a large proportion of the American audience. Third, there is low trust in the mass media. We can see that majorities of every single segment believe that news reporting on the issue is biased. So let's talk about then strategies. First of all, you know, Susan referred to the dialogue, and that is really a good place to start, that we want to elicit from our audiences to the greatest extent we can the questions that they have and then speak to them, not simply what we want to say, but what they are interested in hearing. So they are alarmed and concerned, want to know what kinds of actions they can take. The middle segments want to know, why should I care? What harm is global warming going to do? Because if it's not going to be harmful, why should I care about it? And the bottom two segments are most interested in knowing how we can be so sure that it's happening and that it's human-caused. Now, let's talk about information processing, given that a large proportion of the audience isn't willing to invest very much effort in processing information on this issue. Digesting a chart like this one takes cognitive effort, whereas this image, you get it immediately. That is automatic processing, and that is the information processing system that we want to engage to as great an extent as possible in our communication. I am not suggesting by the bear that we want to scare people. It's just a really cool picture, and I like it, and it makes the point. But if you look at this picture of glacial retreat, you get that. By looking at it immediately, you don't have to put any effort into understanding. So we want to turn to visual imagery whenever we can. Third, we want to try to use narratives wherever we can. These people I've pictured here are residents of Shishmaref, the village in Alaska that had to move because of coastal erosion. But you can also use scientists and fictional narratives as well. When people follow a story with characters that they can identify with, they temporarily assume the perspective of the character that they're identifying with, and that can lead to changes in attitudes. We also know that that science information presented within narratives, even fictional narratives, is learned, and so it's a good way of getting the audience engaged. Fourth, to the extent we can, we want to build positive new social norms. We don't want to believe it, but we really are social animals, and we do what other people are doing. So to the extent that we can suggest that environmentally friendly behaviors and beliefs that they're prevalent, that other people admire them, that they're trendy and the coming thing. That encourages people to assume those same beliefs and behaviors. This is what we all do. And what you want to avoid doing is talking about the prevalence of behaviors that you really want to extinguish. Even when you're lamenting them, saying so many people are doing the wrong thing, what the audience hears is, yes, that's really sad, and that's what everyone does, and I go on doing it and thinking it's sad. So that can actually reinforce the negative behavior rather than motivating people to reduce it. Fifth, we want to try to move the conversation from debates about whether climate change is occurring, which can be a way of stalling action, to instead risk management. So here's an example. We know that 97% of the world's most qualified experts agree that climate change is real and human-caused. If 97% of the world's most qualified pediatricians thought that your kid was really sick, you wouldn't ignore their warnings, right? So the only responsible thing to do is to take seriously the reality of climate change. That is a risk management framing of the issue. And finally, I saw that EPA is emphasizing this. I'm glad to hear that, emphasizing co-benefits for people's health and our communities and the economy is a good way to get those middle segments engaged when they can see all the other good things that are going to come about if we take action to reduce climate change. So just in summary, again, to review those, we want to start from an audience orientation and provide people with the answers to the questions they have. We want to use visual imagery and narratives. We want to try to build positive new social norms, move the conversation to risk management, and emphasize co-benefits. I'd like to encourage you all to go to our website. We have a wealth of materials there on climate change communication. You can subscribe to our newsletter. And finally, the last thing is I'd like to thank our funders, Grantham, CERDNA, and 11th Hour, because without their support, we couldn't be doing this research. Thank you.
Thanks, Connie. It's a really helpful framing of the conversation and some really great insights onto how to actually build on what we know about our audiences and communicate effectively. And we'll be hearing a little bit more about how this has been done and this process and analysis has been done in Maryland in just a moment. But before we move on to Samantha's presentation, we want to pull up another poll question. And so thinking about, you know, the methods of communication and types of messaging that Connie just described, which strategies do you think will be most effective in getting this information to encourage participation in the programs that you are running? So we're interested in hearing about what you think will be effective ways to reach your audiences or what you've tried and what's worked. So please select from these options, you know, as many as are applicable. We've included articles and public service announcements and traditional types of media, word of mouth using local champions, technical information, social media, and then other, and if you're looking for additional information on methods, certainly choose that answer as well, and hopefully we'll be providing some of that through our subsequent presentations. So folks could just take a minute to submit their answers. We would appreciate that. All right, we're going to have to go ahead and pull up the responses as far since we need to keep things moving along. And so it looks like by far the most popular response at 71% is word of mouth and local champions. And I think in, so far what we've heard in the presentations from Suzanne and Connie that that's certainly something that, you know, using those trusted sources is a really key way to get to your audiences. Other options that were popular at 40% listed social media, 38% articles and PSAs. And about 32% are looking for more more methods. And I think also, as we heard in Connie's presentation, technical and scientific information doesn't often resonate with folks or can be a bit more challenging for folks to understand. And so that was one of our least popular responses. So thank you, everyone, for providing that information. And as just a reminder, you know, if you have any questions for the speakers that we've heard from thus far, please type those into the GoToWebinar control panel and indicate who your question is for. We'll get to those at the end of the call today.